Welcome to the Inside Track presented by Call Review. NADA 2025 is in the books, and we hosted a live podcast session on the state of AI with our partners from iWish and PAM, which is what you're about to hear. It's a wide-ranging conversation on all things AI, but certainly coming from the point of view of the automotive industry. I hope you enjoy it, and if you do, please consider liking or subscribing, whether on your podcast app or YouTube. All right, let's get on to the track.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to NADA 2025, and we are coming at you with a special edition AI roundtable from the Call Review booth. I'm very excited to be joined by both our iWish team and our PAM team. They have decided to gracefully join us and talk about the state of AI, what they see the future of AI is going to be, not just in the automotive industry, but in general across the board, right? Very excited. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thanks for having
us. NADA 2025. I'm super excited to be hosting this panel. It wasn't originally me. It was going to be Jeff DePasquale, but he had roofing issues. So we'll leave it at that. Yeah. We're going to throw that in. We love you, Jeff. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to host. Very excited about it. So I'm going to go down the panel. We have Chinmay from iWish. We have Sammy and Abdullah from PAM. And then over there, last but not least, the indomitable Apollo Otika, which I know from a former life. We've been friends and colleagues now for a couple of years, which has been great. So, gentlemen, we're going to start this. It's going to be really quick, really simple. I'm just going to fire off some roundtable things, and we're going to go from there. So, we all know that AI is here. It's a huge theme of this event. We can look out and we see AI across the sea of booths. Everybody's using it, right? I think we're all in agreement that AI is not something that is a nice to have anymore. It's now table stakes, right? And it's really a matter of how you innovate and you layer AI on top of what you're doing inside your dealership or your business and how you're going to use it. So what recent AI-driven innovations do you think or can or are currently making significant impacts? Let's start with the automotive industry and then we can broaden the topic and broaden the conversation as we go. We're just gonna go, we'll go with Apollo first then.
I think it's gonna be this is a really exciting time. I think we're gonna see problems be solved that we didn't think were solvable. I think we're gonna see scale that was not even possible before.
Yep.
And I think that's gonna create disruption and it's gonna create opportunity. And it's going to elevate the customer experience in more ways than we can even conceive today. So I am really excited. I'm so bullish and so driven right now that we are about to see unprecedented change.
Yeah.
And I can't even begin to imagine what it's going to mean in day to day. All I know is that it's going to help people, customers, our dealer partners do way more than they thought was even possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Sammy, Abdullah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess from the perspective that I'm seeing in the market is when AI comes out or a new model comes out or some new capability comes out, people are talking about AI as its own thing, right? This AI thing and what can it do? And it's very mysterious. And, you know, it's almost like so hard to rationalize because its capability is so great. Its capability is so wide and so deep. How do you make sense of it?
Right.
Really, the right way to think about it is it's human level intelligence, right? And as humans are intelligent enough to be able to do anything within an operation, the AI should have the capability to do anything within that operation.
Yeah.
Right? And so you will find over the course of several years, not just in automotive, but in any other industry, people leveraging and augmenting their staff, whether it's at the receptionist level, whether it's at the back office level, whether it's at the executive level.
Sure.
Everyone will be leveraging AI to some, you know, in some way, in some fashion, and slowly you'll see the AI will begin to replicate the same output that individual would be able to do. Not just that, but it can do the output of tens of people and dozens of people. And as time goes on, you will see at some point the replacement and the displacement of people.
Yep.
That's going to happen. It's almost inevitable. We see it already happening for, some of the more, you know, medial, mundane sorts of tasks, right? Like answering calls, for example. But how we adjust from there and kind of fashion ourselves as becoming, these architects of this future, we can now start to think of the higher leverage human touch, types of areas where we can now redirect our staff, redirect our labor focus into those areas where, you know, now you can focus more on the more interesting parts of the customer's life 100%. And their story, right? So it's not so much the AI is telling me a customer wants to buy a car. Instead, the AI is telling me, hey, you should know they're buying a car for their daughter to go to college. And that customer is thinking about how she's going to be safe and will the car keep her safe on the road.
Absolutely.
So go connect with them on that point. Yep. And that's where the human touch is going to
come. That's cool. Sammy?
Yeah, I think to Abdullah's point, the where we are today is super exciting. I kind of want to maybe take a chance to go a little bit backwards and say, how did we get here? I think with AI, a lot of these core ideas has been around from like the 1940s and 60s,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
The paper on neural networks, I think, was first published around the 60s. And then you get to this point in early 2000s where you started to leverage a lot of compute in order to then unlock these networks, right? And then you had the last generation of AI, where it was like decision trees and how do I, you know, map a conversation. But obviously this is impossible. There's no conversation that can be mapped
right.
to a tree, right? Our experience is so diverse and so full of potential and possibility. And then basically you can say ChatGPT happens. And then after that, you get into this human level styled AI that can have all the conversations in the world, that can go deep with its intelligence into your
yep.
systems as a dealer and be able to then perform just like a human would, right? And we really do fashion Pam as a human level agent. If you were to hire someone off the street, well, you could pretty much do the exact same thing by just training Pam in a minimal way
yep.
and we make it really easy.
Yep.
So that's the potential of AI today.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I started to work with especially these LLMs a little bit early on, like 2021. What I am most amazed is how the technology is moving. So GPT-2 was, it would not even work. I mean, it was so unreliable.
Sure.
3 made some improvement, but where it clicked is 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, it is like one improvement after other improvement,
yep.
After other improvement. So I see the pace of acceleration is changing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, cost of these models are coming down.
Yep.
So last week only DeepSeek from China, they are claiming that they released a system which cost them like less than $10 million. They say like $5 million.
Yeah, I read that.
So the impact it would have on some of the things that we were not doing because it was expensive, I think that would change too. So I see more proliferation as a result of that of AI in different aspects
yeah.
in dealer
industry. Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because I was an early adopter. I started using ChatGPT at 2 and it was almost unusable, right? To your point, like I was using it to try and write blogs and things like that. It was really where 3.5 clicked in where I was able to teach that model
yeah.
to be me. Like I put myself in there and now with 4 and whatnot, I have a whole model of myself that I can output. To your point, the production that I can get done, and I sit down at the first of the month and I write every blog that I need to write for the month in 30 minutes. I'm just like, hey, here's my topics, here's the bullet. And then I go spot check it and make sure that my sources are cited correctly, but it's wild. So next, and we're going to start on this side this time. I'm just warning you, so be ready. All right. How do you see the AI technologies evolving? We touched on this a little bit over the next few years. And what advancements do you guys anticipate that we're going to see? And I know you kind of touched on this a little bit, but I want to get your thoughts on how you expand on it. So Chinmay, we'll start with you here.
Yeah, so as I was saying, like GPT-2 to now. At GPT-2, the primary thing was like it can only take, if I remember the number right, 8,000 tokens, which is about the token that you supply and the token it would produce.
Sure.
So like as you said, like making that blog was impossible with that kind of thing. Now it's like hundreds of thousands of tokens.
Right.
So that problem has been solved. At that point of time, people were talking about RAG. I don't think that RAG would stay mainstream anymore or fine-tuning, for example.
Right.
I think those problems would become solved for everybody and anybody. What I am most excited about is the one of the releases that happened last Thursday on operator level. That changes the paradigm and it unlocks a lot of things which are gatekept by different vendors. That obstacle would not be there. It gives more power to the dealership because
right.
now they are not dependent on the vendor making an adjustment. And as a result of that, we will see rapid unlocking because these people at dealership who have firsthand experience, they will figure out things do faster, better,
right.
without requiring any engineering support from the vendor.
Total. Great. Sammy Abdullah.
Yeah. And by the way, just to offer a definition, operator is a product from ChatGPT that uses a computer use agent to navigate a browser autonomously.
Yep.
The thing that I think is that, you know, last year was actually supposed to be the year of AI agents, right? And here we are now, and everyone's like, 2025 is the year of AI agents. And I think what people are realizing is that you could get an AI to do like a specific task or workflow, and you know, the way that it does it now is definitely of a higher level, right? That's basically what PAM is. But we're moving forward is how do you give it the intelligence to be able to think, read, react, reflect, make out a plan of action, start to execute it, take the feedback and execute it again. In a way that I think that translates for dealers specifically is that you're going to be able to take the insights from your CDP or whatever else is giving you insights onto your data. And then you're going to have PAM be able to look at that, think about it, and then chart out a path. And maybe it's across a different modality. Maybe it's across a, you know, maybe PAM is creating a customized video. Who knows, right? With an AI avatar, right? Who knows where it goes? But the point is, it'll be specifically designed for that customer outreach at that time based on their context.
Right.
And that's kind of the level of autonomy that I look forward to. You did say 5 years. And so I think in 5 years, my bold prediction would be that you're going to have a dealership that's run entirely by AI, but has a executive team of humans. We're still in the seat and the decision makers at the end of the day.
Yep.
But their team now are just a bunch of AI agents who are just laying up things for them, throwing them alley-oops. They just have to press approve or whatever. And that's going to be the dealership of the future. And you're going to see high record-breaking profits, record-breaking customer experience, customer satisfaction.
Sure.
And it's going to be a lovely world.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess from my perspective, to piggyback off of some great points that Sami made, there is a lot of, even as human beings, there's constant information fatigue that we go 100%. Through, right? It's like I'm constantly being bombarded with information from this dashboard and that dashboard and, you know, this rep telling me one thing and another rep telling me another thing, right? And really, you know, dealers are experiencing this fatigue as well because they have 7 different vendors that do 7 different things. And what dealers more and more are asking for is, hey, I'd love it if all of these great things can come together in some way, at least talk to one another so that I can see everything in one place, right? And so I don't have to click from this dashboard to another dashboard. So there is a massive opportunity where we can get these, you know, disparate data sources starting to talk to one another through some kind of standardized protocol.
Right.
And, you know, somehow it doesn't exist yet. And so everyone's talking and jumping to the idea of CDPs, and CDPs are going to be great and they're the answer to the problem. The reality is they're not the answer to the problem because we haven't yet solved how the data all interacts and talks to one another so that you can leverage that CDP data a lot more, you know, in a more effective way.
Yeah.
Right. And not even just that, right? To the earlier point, which is once I have this data in front of me, it's not going to force me to, you know, make a decision, right? It's not going to tell me what to do. You know, you could lead the horse to the water, but you can't force it to drink.
Right.
Right. And so to make it as simple as possible for as busy as dealerships are, for as busy as people in automotive are, we're constantly dealing with customers, staff, everything. And as, you know, the dealership, the showroom transforms into a more AI native showroom, you're going to see AI basically telling the dealer what to do in every situation, right? Yep. On the sales side, on the fixed ops side, on the parts side, the AI could be handling back office tasks like ordering a part for you because it anticipates that people will be asking for this part this week, right? It's just those things that you wouldn't even think of that seem so mundane, but will, you know, vastly, significantly affect just the overall operation of how seamless everything can be.
Love that. Apollo, take us home.
Awesome, some great stuff there. And just to just continue on some of these thoughts, I think we've, again, to this interesting time. So if you think about how we're using tooling today, how we're using software and technology today, what does it mean? Well, the user still does a lot of work. So if you think about the equation between what is the user doing, sales agent, service agent, how are they using 1, 2, 3, many platforms, as Abdul has just shared, to try and create information and also extract information to run their day-to-day. Even if you look at the core of core revenue, this customer intelligence, there's so much information.
Yep.
what are we doing with that information today? And I wish with Test Track, what we're trying to do is how do we extract the nuances of customer conversations and just accelerate your sales and your service team's ability to get the repetitions they need to get very, very good at handling customer engagement. Well, we also have tools like PAM that are helping that accelerate that process and improve the quality of engagement across the board.
Yep.
But as a dealer, you've got to be thinking about AI and how important it's going to be is how will you be using the capabilities to support and to accelerate and enable your entire franchise. Here, your entire operations, your entire group there. That question is a really big one. But as we talk about 5 years' time, a lot can happen in 5 years. As human beings, we've seen from an adoption curve standpoint, we relatively overestimate what will happen in the next year. Hence, 2024 year of agents, as Sammy just said, the year late. But we grossly underestimate how much can change in 5 to 10 years.
Sure.
So when we start thinking about, okay, well, what does 5 to 10 years look like for a dealership? Well, that's a completely different question. Because I think AI is going to have a personal role. It's going to have a professional role that might be a little bit different. So for the dealership operations, as we've just heard, well, you then also have to think about what is the interaction between a buyer and a seller, even down to what is the utility of a vehicle to the customer and how will they be engaging?
Right.
The entire transaction model may shift in 5 years, meaning you have to adapt to AI. How will AI help your customers? And how are you going to interface with a customer that is AI enabled as well?
Yep.
So you have to, as a dealer, think about this thing from both perspectives. How am I going to use this? But also, how is my buying process, my marketing, my sales, how's my customer relationship going to change? Because they are AI enabled as well on top of that. I think.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you made me just think of. And I think about you have two young ones. I've got three, right? I have a 5-year-old at home. And I look at the way my children, you know, because I'm in that zennial spot where I remember life before technology, but I'm able to use it. But all three of my kids, just the way they do it. And I look at my 5-year-old and he uses Siri for everything.
Right.
So he's AI enabled already. Mm-hmm. He's like, he has his own personal assistant. And my takeaway here, just being the nerd that I am, is from that question is, and I guess this is kind of a funny question before we move on, is you guys are all telling me I'm going to have Jarvis in like a couple of years, and Jarvis is going to take care of everything for me, which that's kind of interesting to me is, to your point, it's, and Sammy's point, it's interesting to me to think about, hey, you know, using Jarvis as an example, right, is, hey, Jarvis, I need a new car, or Melissa needs a new car. And then Jarvis goes and does it for me. And then all of a sudden, car shows up at the driveway, drone drops it off, or it just drives itself, yeah. Whatever it's going to be.
Not like kid's going to order toys through his...
Right, exactly. And then, now you're just looking at, how did this happen? Which is really cool. So that kind of rolls us into the next topic, right? It opens up some possibilities, because I'm a huge... Apollo knows, and we've talked about it a little bit. I'm a huge dork. But what use cases, we don't have to stick this to the car industry, right? But what use cases do you believe are going to emerge and how are they going to transform some of those customer experiences? And it could be like what I just said, right? Where I've got my own Jarvis or Friday or whatever you want to be. But I just think about, to put you the guys in the mindset of kind of what I'm thinking is like the scene from Minority Report where he walks into Gap and he's got the other person's eye now.
Yeah.
And it automatically identifies them and flashes three outfits up in front of them. So let's go ahead. I'm going to start with you guys this time, Sammy and Abdullah. Where do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think putting the power back into the consumer's hand is definitely going to happen.
Sure.
I think dealers need to be ready for that. I think what that means is you're going to get a 10x, 100x, 1000x more leads because it's not a human doing it. It's going to be an agent doing it on the human behalf.
Right.
I think that reducing that friction in the buying experience is going to just cause a total like explosion in activity. And that means on the dealer side, you're going to be able to, you have to be ready to handle all that, but you can't scale up your human team 100x. You're going to have to do it with the agents as well. I think that's one thing, but I'll throw out a wacky idea out there, which is, it's not too wacky, but it does sound so, which is, you know, what happens when you give your agent your bank account?
Yep.
What happens when you give it a credit card?
Yep.
And, you want to also have the agent have your intelligence to some extent so that, you know, when your kid is trying to use it and trying to use the bank account, it doesn't obviously operates within the right boundaries. But I think in the dealer's perspective, it's going to be, you know, my accounts payable team. You know, maybe my accounts payable team is just a manager.
Sure.
And then reporting to the GM or the dealer principal. And we do that every month. And all the invoices, all the activities, either are the easy ones are paid because the contract, the term's not up yet. So we are going to have to pay those.
Yep.
And the rest are going for review and approval, but it's all curated by your agent.
Yep.
And then once you approve it, the agent is going out and paying, right? And we know with some of the vendors in the space how difficult that can be. But anyways, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of transformation around how we interact with products, how we interact with businesses, how we interact with other people, and how businesses interact with consumers. I actually, you know, foresee a lot more business being done that's based on relationships.
Yeah.
Right? You know, imagine multiple AIs trying to, you know, trying to handle something for you, trying to get you the best deal or something like that. And a lot of people will naturally also just want to, you know, they will be sold to by really, you know, capable AI as well, right? So it's like, whoa, you know, it's never dealt with a better salesman than this before, right? So people are going to want and crave a lot of, you know, business dealings being done through people they know, people they trust, people they're loyal to, things like that. But at the same time, you know, it's like you're going to see this, you know, it's gonna permeate through pretty much not just in our generation. I mean, you're talking about kids, right? I mean, you know, for our children, you know, they're gonna be talking to their toys, right? They already are, right? You know, I'm very excited to see how education will transform.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because in a lot of ways, education is very much geared towards specific children that study in specific ways and learn in specific ways. I'm very excited to see the multimodal aspect of AI and being able to help children visualize complicated concepts so that we can accelerate learning and, you know, get them on a path towards, you know, benefiting society faster, right? You know, and have them doing things that they can enjoy as well. So not just in automotive, but you know, you're going to see a lot more businesses that are trying to leverage, you know, different types of AI in every part of the business. And so I think what we'll end up seeing is, and you know, how we adjust to that world, that new world, that new vision is really the big question, right? There's going to be a lot of people that are willing and ready to embrace it. There's the architects of that future like us that are kind of ushering it further and faster and accelerating towards it. And then there's people that don't want that future at all.
Right.
It's scary. And so there needs to be a good amount of conversation and you know, knowledge sharing happening.
Yep.
So when I talk to people and, you know, kids that are, you know, applying to schools and even applying for jobs, right? And they're getting scared because Devin, the AI engineer, is, you know, in tens of thousands of different companies now. Well, you know, you have to think out of the box now. You have to think about how you can differentiate. You have to be passionate about what you do because there's going to be an AI more passionate than you. So, you know, uncertain future, but, you know, the future was always uncertain.
Yeah, it's always uncertain. Yep, absolutely. So, Apollo.
I love the comment there on, we talked about education. I think that's one of the most fundamental areas for the future going forward. Because if you think about our education system as it is, it's been preparing our youth for a world that's not the same as what they've prepared for. You know, we talk about that shift, and it's happening fast. So what do we do now? I think this is going to be a very powerful opportunity where learning to learn is going to be about reinvention, and it's going to be about more things being possible than I believe people were able to dream about before. So if you think about the creatives out there, that if only they had access to ... they would have been able to create a business. They would have been able to create a piece of art, to express themselves through music in some way.
Yep.
There are many people, millions and billions of people, that where access has been prohibitive, where the world's brightest just didn't have the access or the ability to do things that could have brought so much value
100%.
On a global basis to humanity. We're going to see some of that capacity be released.
Yeah.
And you know, it's very difficult. Look, you can only predict what one can imagine. So while we talk about these things, we don't know where this can go. We don't know how high the ceiling is. We can only dream. as to where it would be. If you look at the world today and show it to someone 50 years ago, yes, some of the stuff they thought about did happen. Something they didn't think about have also happened.
Where are the flying cars?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's that trade-off. So everything's going to be iterative. I think the pace will be faster. Yep. But I think the enablement is only going to allow us to produce and do more and even maybe experience a different type of freedom, because our value is no longer going to be tied to just words per minute, which right. there was a point in time
absolutely.
That was your value, was how quickly could you smash the keys. So if you take away that, I think one of the biggest disruptors is going to be changing the interface. That it is very slow to use a keyboard and mouse. Just imagine how much more you could do if there was a faster way to interface.
Right.
And now everyone has a PhD level assistant helping them achieve and be successful on a day-to-day basis. They have a coach, they have a mentor, you know, they have an associate, they have a partner right there. I think fantastic times are ahead.
Amazing.
There's going to be so much more, and it's going to be exciting to see it happen.
Yeah.
See laptops without keyboards soon.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait.
Jinmei.
Yeah, so in general, the way I see is, and I come from healthcare before I joined for Revo effort here in automation, automotive space. The issue that I see is the trust. And that is the biggest risk currently. If we can overcome that trust issue with AI, and we know that it's working in the owners or users' interests. Think about it, that you have a doctor that knows everything about you, doesn't care how will they get paid for that particular visit.
Right.
And its focus changes from treating your symptoms to keeping you healthy.
Yep.
Right? Same thing you can apply to education, that the teacher is not concerned about that, okay, at state level, this is the performance of my school, and that's how my school would get funding. It's a teacher specifically for you or for that particular kid. The problem that I see currently is that trust. How do we build that trust with AI? How do we make sure? And that's what kind of a, in a way, if you take it on other extreme, Elon is saying that AI is dangerous. And we will see how it unfolds. But I think over the next several years, that would be the biggest battle that tech would fight to overcome that obstacle.
Yeah, and you kind of rolled into my next set of questions. Thank you for that. You know, is and you addressed it a little bit, but I'm gonna. So I want to get the other three opinion is the challenges, right? And I think trust is a big one. I talked to my or not so much my dad, because my dad has been all on this board since Star Trek came out, and he's a huge. It's where I get my nerddom from. But I talked to my father-in-law and even my brother-in-law to an extent. He's a couple years younger than me, and there is that trust issue, right? They're not willing to relinquish the things that they do, and it's not. I don't think with some of them it's a trust issue so much as a control issue. But what are you know? And Sammy and Abdul, I'll start with you guys. What are some of the challenges you guys see and the obstacles, and how do you plan on addressing those as they start coming up?
Yeah.
Want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, but just in general, I mean, how do you establish trust with a customer, right? How do businesses establish trust with one another, right? A lot of it is around, you know, what information is being shared, right? And if the information that's being shared is, you know, being shared in a secure way, in a way that is, you know, that you feel like can be entrusted to the other party, then you feel good about the interaction that's going to happen afterwards. The biggest victims in the current situation, in the current landscape, with all of these different data sources and all the different times that you have to punch in your information and all the different times you have to put in a password and all these other things, people are tired of having to give up their information constantly.
Right.
And that makes them feel vulnerable, because now their information is out there across many different channels, across many different types of sources. And now, there's no benefit to them at all. It's not like they're talking to one another. It's not like that data or that information is, you know, being leveraged in a way that will provide me value.
Right.
Right. All I'm being seen as is, you know, someone that's being, you know, someone that's going to buy a car from you, right? Someone that's going to service my vehicle at your dealership, right? So ultimately, the customers are the victims of the situation, right? And so, when we're building our platforms, you know, people will ask, hey, how important is like privacy and security and things like that? It's almost like it
it's not even a valid question because it goes without saying.
Right.
Right. It's like we build from the ground up knowing that our platform, the way we're leveraging, you know, technology, information and data is going to be completely secure. To the point where it's like we don't even have to think about devoting specific cycles to privacy and security and things like that, because what we're building cohesively from the bottom up is an ultimate secure platform that creates high trust between consumers and businesses and things like that. And so, you know, customers will soon feel rest assured that whenever they share data, they know it's being shared in a way where it will be, you know, not leveraged against them, but it'll be to their benefit, right?
Yep.
And so there's a lot of value in that generally. And then, you know, obviously, you know, we're living in a world where, you know, as we're accelerating into the future, right? As all of these things are happening, you know, simultaneously, it's like, you know, FLAD mode, right? It's just like you're just zooming through it, right? A lot of these concepts are just going to become extremely boring.
Yeah.
Right. You know, one person that I'm friends with, he has like a personal mission of traveling to space. Like, I would love for traveling to space to be a boring activity.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, we talk about all these problems around these things, but I think we're very much at a point now where these things will be solved very soon.
Yep, agree.
People will feel very comfortable about how they engage in business, how they buy from other businesses, things like that, how their information is being leveraged and shared and things like that as well. And soon we'll be able to get to like the big problems, right? It's like multiplanetary species, right? Getting to like, how do you solve like, you know, climate change in the ecosystem and things like that. And so those are like the big exciting problems that we need to devote like a lot of, you know, human capital towards. And
right.
On the topic of trust, I think there's just two trends to look at. One is macro and one's micro, sure. Right? So on the macro level, I think people's, how used to they are talking with an AI, right? If you look at the trend of ChatGPT adoption, even, we're still really on the early part of the trend, right? And not a lot of people are used to talking to their AI. But what we've seen at some of our dealers is that if they had an older generation of AI previously, then their customer base kind of got trained on it, right? They're kind of used to playing ball with an AI, right? Even if it's not as good as what Cam was. And then when they talk to Cam, you know, we find that they actually are really cool with talking with the AI. They have no problem. They know it's an AI. They're saying thank you and the pleasantries and everything else throughout the conversation. And that really helps. Okay, so generally there's a trend of people just getting more and more used to AI. We're seeing it everywhere. It's going to happen. On a micro level, it's, well, how do you develop trust as people? Right? You look each other in the eye, you say your name, shake hands, right? You embrace. And it's basically personalization.
Yeah.
And so what we notice as well in the data is that for customers who get their information to Pam quickly, meaning Pam is able to then start addressing them with their first name, they convert at much higher level.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for customers where the conversions are lacking, it's usually because Pam just doesn't get that level of personalization.
Yeah, great example. I think on the trust and risk side, there's going to be some interesting dynamics across the board, I think, here, because not to repeat anything already shared, but I think if I just distill dealer level, and maybe we'll talk about some other things later, then I think you've got to look at the, there's two sides of this, okay? There is what you are doing, and then there's how others are using it. So the trust risk equation has to go both ways to address you plus the rest of the world or others. How will this technology and tooling ability be used? And some of it is going to be infrastructure level, which is where the big players, partners, you hear of Google, Gemini, you hear of OpenAI, Anthropic. There's an element of what needs to happen at that level. And then there's going to be the layer on top, which is what we as partners, as dealers, as customers, as users, what we do with that tooling and how we deploy those technologies. There's always going to be a risk because of the speed and the capability of the technology enable so much. So you just have to accept there is no system out there that is 100% unbreakable or foolproof. And that's not an AI issue. That's an everything issue. Right. We all are dealing with that today. Your credit card isn't as secure as you want it to be. The keys on your car isn't as secure as you want it to be. That's just life. Everything we do is a risk reward trade-off at the end of the day. So focusing a little bit on that, then you also have to think about risk in terms of not using this capability, not deploying it, not adopting it. Because if we just stop right now, well, does everyone in the world stop? Well, you could argue the risk of not going forward might be bigger than the risk of going forward. Because what happens when other countries maybe create this technology and they then advance faster than we do?
Right.
What happens as if you do not do anything over the next few years, but your competitors do? What advantage does that give them over you, and how will that translate over time? And this then boils down to this trust model we talk about, the role of of people in the equation. And if this technology would allow competitors or new entrants into your market to accelerate and right. compete with you in ways they could never before, because the barrier of entry has come down, now what? How are you going to mitigate that risk of them coming in there? And this all boils down to, how will you as a dealer differentiate? How will you as a professional differentiate?
Right.
That question needs to be addressed, because that is part of the trust equation. How do you differentiate? Because if everyone looks the same and sounds the same, you have to then find a different method to differentiate yourselves. And I think that's where that trust piece is really going to come from. And we heard earlier about elevating the role of the people in the entity to transact in certain ways, because they are going to be very quickly super highly informed buyers out there that will challenge you on your trust. Your reputation and your loyalty is going to matter more than it ever has before.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we're starting to see that a lot in our data, right? Is when we talk about trust and the things that we see, we put out a piece a little bit ago about the selective buyer, right? And how we all know we have more information at our fingertips than any time in the history. And just my wife now can go to a dealership and she buys all our cars. I don't have anything to do with it. If you guys don't know who Katie Mayers is, go look her up. She does a great presentation on that. But, you know, and she goes in and the last time I just sat there until it was time to sign the paperwork, but she negotiated the whole deal and she was challenging the sales guy. And I just finally looked at the dude and said, "You're not equipped for her, man. Go get somebody who knows more," because she knows. And that's a great point. But to your point, I find it interesting what you said about knowing the AI and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Every one of my ChatGPT or Grok or Claude conversations now start with, because I've used it so much, is, "Hey, ChatGPT, how are you today?" Like every single one of them, I find myself interacting with the AI now at that level. Like I have a relationship with this thing, and it's wild to think about. Okay, so we're getting to the end of the time here. And we talked a little bit about this a minute ago, and I mentioned mine is Jarvis, and that to get to that level. And I think about not just AI, but the trends that are coming up. And I'm a huge gamer. I've shared that sentiment with all of you guys. And I think about the way VR is changing and AR is changing. And, you know, I sat down when Santa Claus brought my son a Quest 3 for Christmas. And the first thing I did when he went to bed was watch Dune on an IMAX in my living room, just because I could. And the way that the augmented reality brought down the lights of the room.
Yep.
And even though the sun was out, it was still, it was like 7 o'clock at night. And I knew it was late outside, but I felt like I was sitting in a movie theater. What really cool thing, and this can be completely off the cuff, not in grounded in reality, but what cool trends are you really excited about, you know, going to space and thinking about that? Mine's Jarvis, right? I cannot wait to sit down in my office or wake up in the morning and say, "Hey, Jarvis," or whatever I name it, Conan, what I got on the docket today, and it just lays everything out for me, and then I just have to do that. So Chinmay, we'll start with you.
I think I think about it a lot from entertainment perspective.
Sure.
So initially there were big studios, and then now YouTube came, and then Netflix and Hulu and those kind of platform came. And from there we saw Instagram and TikTok, which are like very, very small clips. I think it will a little bit go back, longer clips, but that entertainment is where I think they will change it. If you can imagine, like there are a lot of Netflix shows which have a lot of violence. Otherwise, you like the show, but just the level of violence they are showing, a lot of people are not comfortable. They don't feel like watching. Now imagine it can adjust to that level. Or even there are other, like South Park, for example. South Park is funny like anything.
Yeah.
However, is it appropriate for kids?
Sure.
That's the question you ask. But filming the whole show so that it appropriate for all audience is difficult. And what can happen with this AI is that entertainment, the good part, everybody would be able to use, but you can adjust it to your age level, they are different countries, they have different kind of restrictions without kind of a spending a whole lot of money. So I think that's where I am looking at, that entertainment would totally change from whatever we think Netflix and TikTok is the best,
yeah,
to something more personalized.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. I'm waiting for the holodeck. That's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting to be able to walk into a room and say, I want to play Call of Duty.
There we go.
We got it. All right, Sammy, let's go to you.
So my personal biggest passion is AR, VR.
Sure.
I think we've already had a couple of those comments. Yep. So I'll take it in a different direction, which is I think there's a trend that's happening that is already, that's already here, really, if you really know where to look for it, which is the idea that, if I wanted to look for a certain product or application, I would, I'd Google it, I'd go through a list of stuff, and it takes me some time. Now we get to a point where you can, instead of doing that, you can literally just tell the AI coding agent what it is you're looking for, and it will build it,
yep,
faster, and you could search for it,
yep,
yourself, right? This is an insane leap forward in the ability for AI to code. And I'll give you an example. My friend enjoys the game Wordle.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I want to play in a different language. I want the Arabic word Wordle. Okay. And then literally in 8 minutes, the agent put the game together for him.
It's wild.
It took him hours,
yep,
to figure it out, to even define one. And then if he did find one, would it really be the way that he wanted it? And it's really powerful. And I think now you're going to have the citizen developer, right? The folks at Replit have coined this term. And you're going to have people who, even kids. Kids are just going to be able to talk to things. You can talk, you can create an app, and you can be able to program.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And, to take it all the way down to the level of the dealer, I think it's that that is super exciting, because now you should have higher demands of your vendors. Your vendors should be able to customize features out to the level of your specific dealership, maybe for the specific customer. And you should expect that they do that, because writing code is becoming pretty cheap.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, you didn't add the last part at the end of the story, which was, it was easier to build it. It took less time to build it than it did to solve the actual Wordle.
Right.
I'm very passionate about robotics. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a robotics engineer. I just wanted to build robots and things like that. Of course, that was amongst a lot of other things that I wanted to do as well. But at one point in first grade and then later again in fourth grade, I remember giving presentations about how I wanted to be a robotics engineer. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in AI-enabled, robots that are taking on these humanoid forms.
100%.
That are not just working in factories and things like that, but are also at home and, doing dishes and, cooking for you and handling all those things that just cause you a lot of stress.
Yep.
That's obviously very exciting. I'm interested in seeing, with natural disasters happening across the, across the globe, with fires like we see in the Palisades, and hope people are safe, and hopefully we can get them to a point where they can have a home again, basically. But imagine if we were at a point where we could build a home in a week,
right?
Material science has to evolve a little bit, robotics has to evolve a little bit in order to do that, but we can become more resilient as a species against these, disasters.
Sure.
And also the prevention of these disasters too, right? If you could just have drones and robots just fighting these fires so that we don't have to put human lives at risk, I'm really interested to see how we can begin to accelerate and enable ourselves so that we can preserve human life.
Yeah.
Whether we solve, the problem of dying, right? I think it's disease and other things that just cause us a lot of pain. I would love my vision for the world. I would love to see the world just in a state of healing and peace where people can actually just know one another.
Yeah.
Right?
I love
that. And knowing one another, understanding their backgrounds and their experiences and their languages and whatever, and just communicating at a human level and just going past the screens. I want the world to get smaller.
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah.
Take us home, Apollo.
I will. So there's a part of what you said, actually, I think it resonates as well, which is the community. So many issues are the result of communication problems. And I think if we can elevate our ability to communicate and reach understanding, as we just heard, familiarity, commonality, I think you end up on an exponential curve of what is possible as a result of that. I also think that
the time value equation we're all familiar with is changing. And I think we should all be thinking about what do we want to do with our time? Because what's going to be possible is increasing the different options, flexibility. So what is possible, even achievable in a lifetime is increasing.
Yep.
And at the flip side of that, we look at the delaying death, if you will, the medical science innovations that are happening, one's lifetime is also increasing.
Sure.
So when you have two exponentials, it is very hard to try and quantify what is possible,
right,
and will be possible in one's life going forward with those two circumstances both playing out and accelerating on parabolic curves. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with that. So I think it's going to take things back a little bit to soul searching and going inside and really learning about who are you?
Yeah.
What gives you joy? You know, what is the purpose that you want to pursue? Because it's possible now. The old roadblocks won't necessarily be there in the ways that they were. And will you work? Probably, yes. But how you will work, how you innovate, how you provide value to society is going to evolve.
Right.
And I think that changes everything about the entire equation of life,
yeah,
of society, of relationships,
yeah,
of these partnerships, especially as we are us becoming interplanetary species. Yep.
Love it.
So much to come.
It's awesome.
One of our mentors actually, he recently said 50 years in the future, if you're in a world that you don't like, just hop on a spaceship and go to another world that you do like, right? So, you know, it's like you'll see the divergence of, like, you know, human thought and experiences. And so if you don't like one planet, just go to another one.
Yeah, just the possibilities are endless, and it's a very exciting time. And I, you know, to bring that point up, I get very jealous of my 5-year-old knowing that, you know, when he's still alive and I'm gone, his kids and my
grandkids. You might not be gone as early as.
Right, exactly. But my grandkids
might
are going to be
300 years.
Yeah, are going to be potentially hopping planets in a way that we like. But anyway, gentlemen, it's time to wrap up. Thank you so much. This was amazing. Thank you so much for joining us here. And for everybody that was at NADA 2025, we'll see you next time. Thank you. Take care. Guys, that was phenomenal. Thank you so much. It is now. Cool.